Shalom to all. Today's office is Yavam Zachav Beis, and we are starting Chafal on Beis, the last line with the words Rav Amar. And today's office sponsor Eli Nishmas Marsh Mem Shar Basi Baka Moshe Hernish Shama should have an Aliyah. We're discussing when a person is supposed to bring an Asham Taloi. The Mishnah said that a person did Yibam, so Shimon was Miyabim Reuven's wife, and it turns out that she was pregnant and then she had a child, and it was a Suffolk whose child it is. Is it Reuven's or Shimon's? So Chayv and Asham Taloi, because maybe they were over the Isser of Eishes Ach. Now Rabbi Yosei clarified, when does a person bring an Asham Taloi? That's only if he will never be able to clarify the Suffolk. The Suffolk was the Ivan Navero that would be Chayv and Makarbon Chatos, and if he's never going to be able to determine that suffix, so then he's going to bring Asham Taloi. However, if at some point in time in the future, it could even be in a really long time, he will be able to determine with 100% certainty whether or not he was Iver and Isser, so then he does not bring an Asham Taloi, even though he's currently in a state of suffix. Now, says the Gemara, the exact opposite Shita. Rav Amarav says, Kol she'ief shalei lamad al vadoi. If a person is never going to be able to discover with vadois if he was Iver and Isser, so chafez amarav on top, ain't chayv on al sfeika Asham Taloi. He's not chayv for that suffix to bring an Asham Taloi. The whole purpose of bringing Asham Taloi is to be making all of Minei Yisurin. It protects him from Yisurim and protects him from a certain level of punishment and hardship and difficulty and challenge that he would be subject to until he figures out if he did something wrong. But if he's never going to be able to figure out with 100% certainty if he did something wrong, so then he doesn't have to bring an Asham Taloi. So we say that Rav's exact opposite of Rabbi Yosi. According to Rabbi Yosi, if he will be able to figure out with 100% certainty if he did something wrong, so then he does not bring an Asham Taloi. It's only if he will never be able to clarify the suffix, then he brings an Asham Taloi. Whereas Rav says that no, it's only if he will be able to clarify the suffix, then he does bring an Asham Taloi. But if he's never going to be able to clarify the suffix, he does not bring an Asham Taloi. No, hey, Chavida, how this be played out, meaning what's an example? He had two Gzeis in front of him, one was Chilev, one was Shuman, and he ate one of them, and then a raven came and ate the second one. Now pay attention to the gears of changes we're going to have here. Since there was a point in time that he was able to determine which one was which. Before he ate anything, there was two pieces in front of him, and he could have done a check, he could have called an expert or whatever it is, run some tests, and then he would have been able to determine which one was Chayil, which one was Shuman. Therefore, Chayav and Al-Sfeika Ashman Taloi, that's Barbara Girsa, he's Chayav on this Safik and Ashman Taloi. Even though the raven ate the second piece and he doesn't have it in front of him, when he approached the situation, he was able to determine with 100% certainty which one was Asr, which one was Mutter, so Mela, he's Chayav and Ashman Taloi. Aval, however, Im Achal Ariv Tchila, if the raven had come and eaten the first piece, Va'achakach Achal Hu, then he ate the second piece, so Me'achar She'eno Yachlam Ravadai, since when he came to eat this piece, he wasn't able to determine what it was, because there was only one piece in front of him. So ain chayav nosfeik Asham Taloi, he's not chayav Asham Taloi. But now we ask, like in Amar Rav, doesn't Rav also say v'hu sheichich l'fanav chilev barer? It has to be that there's 100% iser of chilev in front of him. It is about a different situation that Rav said if there's one piece in front of him and the piece itself is a suffik, maybe it's chilev, maybe it's shuman, so he's not going to be chayav Asham Taloi for eating that. In other words, learn from Rav that there has to be ikba isura, a situation that there's 100% iser over here. And that being said, even in the second situation that Rav brought up, he should be chayav Asham Taloi, because what happened? There were two pieces, one was Chilev, one was Shuman, so it was Ikba Yisura, there's definite Isser over here. Then the raven came and ate a piece, then he went and ate the second piece, he should still be Chayiv, because there was a definite Isser over here. Why are we saying he's not Chayiv? And the answer is, Afagav Rav Amar V'hu Sheichich L'fan of Chilev Barer. You're 100% right, even though Rav does say that there has to be Ikba Yisura, there has to be a definite piece that's Chilev over here, Maidu Hachi still agrees, Shiachlam Rav Adai, that we also have to factor in that he has to be able to be Aymed on the Vados of the situation if he was Iver. And therefore, in the second case, when the Irev was one that ate the first piece, by the time this fellow came up to eat the second piece, there was only one piece in front of him. And by that time, it wasn't possible to be Oymed Al-Vadai to discover what that piece was, because again, the raven ate the other piece, and therefore he's Pater. We continue discussing Masnisa Pligal Rav. The following mission is not like Rav, Kai or Kvi, which is a type of animal, it's a suffix if it's a behemoth or a chaya. We know that the chaylov of a behemoth is asr to eat, whereas the chaylov of a chaya is mutter to eat. So Blazer Amr Blazer says, Chayavna Chalbay Asham Taloi, if the person eats the chaylov of a kai, he's chayv in Asham Taloi, and that's even though he's not able to determine with 100% certainty if he was Ivor Naveira, because it itself is a suffix. Rav, what does Rav do with this? The answer is Pasr La, Chalukin al Divrei Blazer. We explained that Rav holds like the Man Damar, who argues the Rav Blazer, that's a Chachamim, and they say that he's not Chayv in Asham Taloi. Another question, Masnisa Pligal Rav. We have the following case, Chatichah Shal Chulin v'Chatichah Shal Kodesh. There's two pieces of meat, one of Chulin, one of Kodshim, and we know if a person eats the Kodshim one, he's Chayv Me'ila. So Achaz Achaz Mehen, if a person ate one of them, he doesn't know which one he ate, so maybe Asham Taloi has to bring an Asham Taloi. Achaz Shniyaf, he ate the second one as well, maybe Asham Vadai, he has to bring an Asham Vadai, because he for sure ate the piece that was Kodesh, so he has to bring a definite Asham. Now let's say Achaz HaRishayna, he ate the first one, Uba Acher V'Achaz HaShniyah, and then a second fellow came and ate the second piece, so Zem maybe Asham Taloi, Zem maybe Asham Taloi, each one has to bring an Asham Taloi. So Nicha, Rishon maybe Asham Taloi, we understand according to Rav, the first one has to bring an Asham Taloi, because when he approached the table, there was two pieces on it, and one piece was definitely Asher, and he was able to be Aymed Al-Vadai, he technically could have checked which one was which, he could have asked or whatever it was, run a test, and then he would have known which one is the problematic one, and so that's why he's chayv nashim taloi. But sheni lama, the second one, why would he be chayv nashim taloi? When he came to the table, there's only one piece left. That's not ichzik isura, I efshur lamed alvadai, so why is he chayv nashim taloi? So Rav Yossi answers, tifter, we could explain, shayz chaticha gedoyla v'achachatzia v'niachatzia. It's talking about where the first piece was very large. The first fellow only ate half of it, leaving the other half there. Then when the second fellow came along, he ate the second piece. And that means that even the second fellow also had the same exact criteria as the first one, so that's why he's also chayv nashim taloi. One more question, masisa pliya rav. Our mission is problematic with rav. What do we say at the end of the mission? Safek matish l'rishon ben shivel achrayin. If the vama gave birth to a child, and we don't know if it's a 9-month pregnancy from her original husband Reuven, or if it's a 7-month pregnancy from her new husband Shimon, so yaitzi vavlad kasher, he has to send his wife away. The child's kasher, he doesn't have a problem, but v'chayv nashim taloi, he's chayv nashim taloi. And so we have the same question. It's impossible to determine bivados whose child this is, but still the Mishnah said v'chayv nashim asham taloi, that he's chayv on safek asham taloi. That's definitely not like rav. So Rav Yosi says that kaim reb zeira kumi reb chia barva. The reb zeira established it and explained it from reb chia barva, and reb chizkiya quotes reb chia barva that kaim reb zeira the kaminon. How do we explain the Mishnah? Me'achar shu yachol laharos v'lifrosh v'leida imimenuhu imme'acharhu. Since after ahara he could have separated from her, and then he would have known if it was from her or from somebody else. So then, yachalam ravadai, it is considered a case that he's able to be oimed on its vados, whose child it is. Now, what's this referring to? So we have to know, halachically, when he acquires her, which part of the bia that is. And that's what the Gemara says, yachal laharais, he's able to do ha'ara. That's basically right at the beginning of bia, even before zriya, before his zera goes into her, even just at the beginning of bia, it's officially considered like he was bail her, and that he acquired her as yavama. So now we have a really good answer. Initially, when he was bail her, he could have just done ha'ara, then he could have separated from her until she gave birth, then obviously he would have known if it's from him or if it's from somebody else, due to the fact that since he didn't complete his bia, obviously the child's not from him, and it's from Reuven, her original husband, and so that would be a case where he was kindness as Yavama, and she turned out to be pregnant, and she had a child, and we could have easily determined who this child is from. It obviously would have been from Reuven, because again, Shimon never completed the bia, and that's considered a situation that Yachol Lamed Alvadayoi, that he technically had a point in time, that he was able to determine what the situation is with clarity. Same exact thing with the two pieces on the table, and he ate one, and then the raven ate the other one. And so, yeah, by the time the raven ate it, he didn't have a chance to be able to figure out which one was Asr Mutter, but before he even ate it in the first place, he could have figured it out. Same thing over here. So, this case of the Mishnah is not problematic with Rav Shita. Now, we'll go on to our next sugya, which is really a continuation of his last case. Again, what did the Mishnah say? So, Shimon married his Yavama. She turned out to be pregnant, and then she gave birth to a child, and it's a suffix. Is he a 9-month child from Reuven, or is he a 7-month child from Shimon? So, the Gemara asks, Manan Kamen, what are we referring to over here? In Bishabal, Leil, Acher Mises, Baila Miyad, if Shimon was Bail her right after Reuven died, and then Hooker Ubra, Leacher Shnei Chadashim, let's say there was Hakaras Ubar, which means it was recognizable that she was pregnant. She started showing after 2 months, and then she gave birth either 5 or 7 months later. So, Nisni, the Mishnah should teach, Ben Tisha Lezeh Ulezeh, Ben Shiva Lezeh Ulezeh. Then, what's the suffix? Is this a 9-month pregnancy from Reuven or Shimon, or is this a 7-month pregnancy from Reuven or Shimon? Again, that just depends how long after he was Miyabim her she gave birth, 9 or 7 months. The key is, though, it would be the same exact suffix. It would either be a 9-month pregnancy from Reuven, because that would be that he was Bail her, let's say, on the day of death, and the day afterwards, Shimon was Bail her. So, it basically happened the same day. So, we don't know if it's a 7 or 9 month pregnancy from Reuven or 7 or 9 month pregnancy from Shimon. Why would the Mishnah say that it's a suffix if it's a 9-month pregnancy from the first one or a 7-month pregnancy from the second one? So, here's a different suggestion. Elkanah Kaiman read, this is what the Mishnah is talking about. Bishabal Leil Acher Shnei Chadashim. It's where Reuven died, and then Shimon only was Bail her after 2 months. V'hukar Ubra La'acher Shloisha Chadashim. And then she started showing after 3 months. So, now a total of 5 months has passed since Reuven died, and then she gave birth 2 months later. So, maybe this is a 9-month pregnancy from Reuven, or maybe it's a 7-month pregnancy from Shimon. Now, the reason why that can't be is because Nisni, then we should have a mission that teaches us that no Yibam or Chalitz is allowed to happen with the Yavama until 5 months passes after her husband dies. Because in the way we just presented the case, since you're saying that she only started showing 3 months after Shimon married her, but Reuven had died 5 months prior, that means she's only showing after 5 months of pregnancy, so then all Yavamas should be usher to marry the Chalitza to until after 5 months, not 3 months, which we know is a cutoff date. Says the Gemara, you're right. Elokein and Kamin, what are we referring to in the Mishnah? Kishibal Lelach Arbaim Yaim, where Shimon was Bail her 40 days after Reuven died. Chavez Omen based on top, Vahukar Obra Lachar Chamishim Yaim. Then there was Hakaras Ubar, her pregnancy started showing after 50 days. And it means that this could either be Reuven's baby and she's showing 90 days after getting pregnant from him, that's a full 3 months, or maybe it's Shimon's baby and she's showing pretty early, that's only 50 days after getting pregnant from him, and that's what the suffix of the Mishnah is. Now, before we continue, to fully understand the next 4 lines of Gemara, we have to have questions. quite the introduction. Let's explain something. How could she be showing after only 50 days of pregnancy? So in the days of Chazal, a viable pregnancy was either 7 or 9 months, not 8. And a woman starts showing after the first trimester or the first third of the pregnancy. Therefore, in a standard 9-month full-term pregnancy, she would begin showing at day 90. However, what we're about to see is that there's also a 7-month or a short-term pregnancy. Now, 7 months is 210 days. Now, if that's so, her first trimester would really only be after 70 days of getting pregnant. So our question still remains, how do we get her showing at day 50, which is again what the Gemara just suggested? That's because of the following. The months of pregnancy are not calculated by days, rather by actual calendrical months. Therefore, the last day of 1 month and the first day of a different month are actually counted as 2 full months. What follows is that if we take 7 calendar months and we begin counting the last day of month 1, then all the days in the middle 5 months, and then the first day of month 7, that's a total of 150 days. So a woman can actually begin showing as early as 50 days. And again, that would indicate that her pregnancy would be only a 7-month pregnancy, not a 9-month. And we still have some more to go, so please bear with me. If this whole thing was purely mathematical, so we technically would be able to calculate with precision when a woman's going to give birth. Whenever she starts showing, so that's the end of her first trimester, so just multiply that by 3, and then we'll know when she's going to give birth. So for example, if she shows on day 50, then that times 3 would be 3 trimesters. That means she'd give birth on day 150. We're on the opposite side of the spectrum with a full-term 9-month pregnancy. The first trimester she's showing at day 90, so multiply that by 3. That means she's going to give birth on day 270 or at the end of 9 months. However, as the Gemara is now going to tell us, that when she starts showing, that's not indicative of anything. And that's because the beginning and the end of the pregnancy are not connected. She could begin showing based off of a cheshbon of a full-term 9-month pregnancy, but give birth based off of a shortened 9-month pregnancy. Or she could start showing based off of a cheshbon of a shortened 7-month pregnancy, but give birth based off of a full-term 7-month pregnancy. And both of these are learned from the Mishnah. So just to summarize, a pregnancy is either 7 or 9 months, and each of these options has two possibilities. It could be shortened or it could be full. So a 7-month pregnancy can last anywhere between 150 and 200 days, and a 9-month pregnancy can last anywhere between 210 and 270 days. And so now back to the Mishnah's case, where we had just said that the Yavama started showing on day 50 after Yibum, and then she gave birth sometime later, and we're besuffing whether this is Reuven's child and it's a 9-month pregnancy, or if this is Shimon's child and this is a 7-month pregnancy. It says the Gemara, we're at the end of the top line, Hare Yashkan Shleimim L'Rishon U'Kutam L'Sheni. Turns out this is a whole pregnancy for the first one, or a shortened and mikutaim, a truncated one for the second one. Again, the reason why we're saying full pregnancy from Reuven is because she began showing on day 90, or it's a shortened one from Shimon because she began showing on day 50. We have a series of things that we learn from here. Shema Amina, one thing that we learn from here is she'isha yoledes l'chadashim shleimim, that a woman will give birth after whole months. And it's what we said before, that even though she began showing at day 50, which is the shortest amount of time for a 7-month pregnancy, if she would give birth 100 days later, it can't possibly be from Reuven, because Reuven's is definitely a 9-month pregnancy. Therefore, it would have to be that she gave birth on day 210 of her pregnancy. And so we see that even though when she began showing, the indication was that she was going to be having a short 7-month pregnancy, she could actually carry the child a full 7 months. That's what it means, yoledes l'chadashim shleimim, that she could give birth to whole months, meaning it could be a full 7-month pregnancy when she began showing. The indication was that she was going to give birth way earlier than that. Also says the Gemara, achma mina shehin shtei yitziros, you learn from here that a 7-month and a 9-month pregnancy are actually two different creations, is two totally separate things. And another thing is, achma mina, you learn from here, she'isha yoledes l'chadashim mikutayin, that a woman could give birth in shortened months. And this is the reverse of the previous one. That even we're going to say she starts showing on day 90, and that indicates a full-term 9-month pregnancy. Still, since we're misupping in this situation of her Mishnah, whose baby it is, that has to be that she gave birth on day 210 of her pregnancy. And that would mean that if it really was indeed Reuven's, it's a shortened 9-month pregnancy. That's what we mean, chadashim mikutayin. Now, everything we just said was pretty complicated. So simply put, and maybe even oversimplifying it, is that the whole point of this Gemara is we need to show how it could be that when she gave birth, it was approximately day 210 of her pregnancy, and therefore that could be a shortened 9-month pregnancy, which would be Reuven's, or a full-term 7-month pregnancy from Shemen. Now, another thing we learn from here is that Shema Amina, you learn, she'ein ho'isha me'uberes v'chazeres v'misaberes, a woman is not able to become pregnant and then become pregnant again. That's because if she could get pregnant while she's already pregnant, then she should not be allowed to marry at the 3-month mark, because she could technically get pregnant pregnant right away, have twins after 150 days, and then one of those could be a shortened 9-month pregnancy from Reuven, and the other could be a shortened 7-month from the new husband, Shimon, and we still wouldn't know who the father of each of these kids is. And since we do not say that, and we allow her to get married after 3 months, it must be that once a woman's pregnant, she's not able to get pregnant during that pregnancy. And one more thing, Ashma Mina, you learn from here, Shoisha Ein Mistaveres Mishnei Bnei Adam Kachas, a woman can't become pregnant from two people. And we see that because once she starts showing at 3 months, we say she's allowed to get married, and we're not afraid that the Zera, the new husband, is going to join with the Zera of the original husband, and that this child is going to ki'ilu have two fathers. We're not afraid of that, says the Gemara, Pligal de Rabbanon Dagata. This is not like the Rabbanon who teach Agatas. Rabban Dagata Imrim, they say as follows, the Pasuk says, Vayetzi ish habeinayim marachas plishtim, that a man came out from the marachas of the plishtim. Now this is talking about Golias when he came to fight the Yedin. We know eventually David HaMelech killed him, and it says that he came from the marachas of the plishtim, which literally means the battle arrangements. However, there's a Kriyan Aksiv. Even though we read the word as marachas, the word is written as ma'ares plishtim. And we learn from here a description about Golias that he is from ma'ares plishtim. What does that mean? Mimea areles plishtim, he comes from 100 areles of plishtim, sheharuba mea areles plishtim, that his mother had bia with 100 plishtim in one night, and together all their zera mixed, and that's what birthed Golias. So technically he had 100 fathers, and so clearly this argues what we just said previously, that a person can't come from two fathers. However, Amar Tanya says, they're not arguing. Before the zera, the semen, the seed, becomes ruined, becomes putrid, a woman could become pregnant from two men, whereas Mishanisra Zera, once the zera goes bad, a woman is not able to become Ubaris from two men at the same time. And therefore, in the case of Golias, his mother was with 100 men the same night, so all their zera could have mixed to produce Golias. As opposed to when a woman waits 3 months, we know the zera goes bad after 3 days, so for sure in that case, the zera of two fathers is not able to mix to produce one child. Now we just continue with something we mentioned before. How do we know there's two different formations, meaning that a 7-month pregnancy and a 9-month pregnancy are considered like two separate creations? So Zera says, Rav Huna, the Pasuk tells us, Vayitzer, informed man, but there's two yuds over here, as that means that there's really two yitziras, yitzira l'sheva, yitzira l'tesha, a 7-month yitzira and a 9-month yitzira. Now we can see discussing, we mentioned previously, the Chazal tell us that a woman can only give birth after 9 months or 7 months, but an 8-month pregnancy, the child's not going to live. Therefore, the Gemara tells us, Nitzir l'sheva, if a child was formed to be a 7-month pregnancy, v'noy l'shmaina, but it was born after 8 months, chai, it's going to live, and kol shekein l'tesha, for sure, if it goes 9 months, and that's because, since it's supposed to be born after 7 months, which is a very short amount of time of developing, if it gets another month or even 2 months to develop in the mother's stomach, it's for sure going to live. However, Nitzir l'tesha, if the child was originally formed to be a 9-month pregnancy, v'noy l'shmaina, and it was born after only 8 months, ein chai, it's not going to live. Now, what about the following? Nitzir l'tesha, v'noy l'sheva, that's a proper girsa. Let's say the child was originally formed to be born after 9 months, but it was born after 7. What would we say over here? Is the child a ben kayama? And the answer is, as chami, come and see. Im l'shmaina ein chaya. If what we had just said before, that when it's supposed to be 9 months, but it was born after 8 months, it's not going to live. Like kol shekein l'sheva, isn't for sure not going to live if it's born after 7 months? So that's the answer. Now, initial discussion over here. Bon kumir avo. They asked him for avo. And the they over here is the non-Jewish chachamim. Minayin leben sheva shu chaya. How do we know that a 7-month pregnancy is able to last and the child will live? So Amar Lain, he told them, midetchein ano yoav l'chein. From you, I will give you. Which means I'm going to answer to you based off of your language. And he told them the following thing in Greek. And here's the proper girsa. Zuta, avta, uta, achta. What does that mean? So in Greek, the letter or symbol called zuta or zeta represents the number 7, but it also means will live. And also the way to say the number 7 is avta. So zuta avta can mean either 7-7 or it can mean 7 will live. And it's the same thing with the next part. The letter or symbol called uta represents the number 8, but it also means will die. And achta is the way to say the number 8. So uta achta either means 8-8 or it means that 8 will die. And that's what he was telling them. Zuta avta uta achta, 7 will live, 8 will die. Now we get into another discussion regarding Yerusha. Let's explain the basic idea before we continue. The general idea of Yerusha is that a child inherits a father. Now, if a child dies, then the Yerusha is going to go up to his father if his father's alive. If not, it goes to the father's brothers. That would be his uncles. Now, if a grandfather dies, the Yerusha goes to his sons. And even if one of his sons had passed away, he is still, so to speak, Yairish his father. That's called Yerusha Bekever. And practically, that would go to his son, who's a grandchild. Now, when a woman dies, her Yerusha goes to her husband, but if there is none, it goes to her child, and if there are no children, it goes to her brothers. So now bearing all that in mind, we discuss the case of our Mishnah, where we have Reuven dying without children, so technically his Yerusha would go to his brothers, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, let's say, but now we bring the end of our Mishnah, where we also have this Suffolk child, we're not so sure if it's Reuven's, or maybe it's Shimon's. So here's the first case, Suffolk, the Suffolk comes along to take the chelik of his father, he claims that my father's Reuven, so he he wants to get Yerusha of his father, Amrin Leh, the brothers could tell him, Hani Avich, this one's your father, meaning Shimon's your father, and Shimon's alive, so you don't get any of Reuven's Yerusha, and we, the brothers, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, we're going to split it equally. But now let's say, Baha Yavam Lita Chakash al Achiv, the Yavam Shimon, he comes to take the chilk of his brother, he's saying, look, I dinked Reuven's wife, so I take his place, and therefore I get his entire Yerusha, because that's the din. Amrin Leh, the brothers can tell him, Hani Berei, the Suffolk is actually Reuven's son, therefore you're just going to serve a regular brother, you're not the Yavam, so you just split it equally with us, and you don't take everything. So the question is, Haketzad, how do we work it out in this case? So it really depends how well they get along. Oisin Shifiyas Benehen, they make a compromise with each other, meaning Shimon and the Suffolk are able to work it out together, so then they take everything, Umachalka Nechse Ameis, and they split the Nechasim of Reuven equally. That's because it's a Muman of Shach. If the Suffolk is really Reuven's child, that means the entire Yerusha goes to him, but if not, and the Suffolk is really Shimon's child, that means Shimon's the Yavam, so the entire Yerusha should go to him. So if Shimon and the Suffolk are able to get along with each other and get a document signed, where basically Bezin works it out from a halachic standpoint, that they both agree that they're going to take it, so they take the entire thing, they split it between them, and the other brothers don't get anything. Nimtzeis Omer, turns out you say, Neshifeis La'achin, when we're able to make a compromise between brothers, we're calling Shimon and the Suffolk brothers over here, Hefsid La'achin, that's a loss to the other brothers. However, Tachros Ba'achin, Schar Ba'achin, that's Barbara Gersal, if there's a fight or disagreement, meaning Shimon and the Suffolk are not able to agree on this, so that ends up being a gain for the other brothers, because that means it's going to be split equally in between Shimon Levi Yehuda, and Shimon's not going to be able to split it equally with the Suffolk. Going to the next Yerusha discussion, Meis HaZakeh, let's say the grandfather dies, meaning Yaakov, who's Reuven, Shimon Levi, and Yehuda's father, he died. Another discussion between the brothers, where's the Yerusha go? The Suffolk claims that he's Reuven's son, so he gets his father's portion of the grandfather's Yerusha. However, they're telling him that no, you're Shimon's son, therefore it's only going to be divided three ways, and that's what the Pesach is. The Gemara tells us, Hare Yesh Kan, that's the proper Girsa, Ban Bevadai, we have 100% sons over here, and Ben Habain Besuffolk, the grandson is only Suffolk, meaning the Suffolk over here, he's claiming that he's Reuven's son, but that's just a Suffolk, maybe he's really Shimon's son, and therefore, in Suffolk Mezmidei Vadai, we have Vadai sons over here, that would be Shimon Levi Yehuda, they're going to divide their father's Yerusha equally, not giving anything to the Suffolk. Another situation, Meis HaSuffolk, let's say the Suffolk himself died, now we have an argument between Shimon the Yavam and his brothers. Shimon claims that this is my son that died, so I get his entire Yerusha, whereas the brothers say that no, he's really our nephew, he's Reuven's son, and therefore all of his father's properties get divided equally between us. What's the din? Hare Yesh Kan Achei Av Vadai, there's for sure brothers of the father, whereas Va'av Besuffolk, there's only a Suffolk father, because Shimon is only Besuffolk, this child's father. Therefore, the Yerusha is going to be divided equally between the brothers, and Shimon can't claim that the Suffolk is 100% his son. Another case, Meis Echam and Achen, let's say one of the brothers dies, as Machlok is between the Yavam and the Suffolk. The Suffolk says that my father's really Reuven, so I get to divide the Yerusha with all the other brothers, because I'm coming Mikaich my father Reuven, whereas Shimon says, no, you're my son, and therefore only I get to divide the Yerusha with my other brothers, and you don't get anything. So what's the din? Hari Kan Yesh Ach Bevadai Uben Ach Besuffolk. We have a definite brother. We have a Suffolk, son of a brother. The Suffolk over here is only a Suffolk if he's Reuven's child, therefore he doesn't get anything. Another situation, Mesa Ima Shel Suffolk. Let's say the mother of the Suffolk dies, and the Suffolk says, listen, it's my mother, I get to Yarshin her, whereas the Yavam says, she's my wife, I get to Yarshin her. Hare Yesh Kan Ben Bevadai Ubal Besuffolk. Over here we have 100% son. The Suffolk is for sure this woman's son, and we only have a Suffolk husband. Shimon maybe wasn't allowed to do Yibam anyway, because maybe this is really Reuven's son, and therefore the Suffolk gets the entire Yerusha. Chav Gimel Rav on top of another case, Meis HaSuffolk V'Achach Meis HaImoy. Let's say the Suffolk dies, so he's totally out of the picture, and then his mother died. So we have a machlokes between the Yavam and the mother's Yarshim. The Yavam says, look, she's my wife, so I get to Yarshin her, whereas the mother's Yarshim, her brothers for example, they claim that you're not the Yavam. Really, there's never Chi of Yibam in the first place, because the child that you have, that Suffolk, he's really Reuven's son, therefore we Yarshin everything. What's the din? Hare Yesh Kan Ache Im Bevadai. We have people over here who are definite brothers of the mother, when Baal Besuffolk, the husband is still a Suffolk, so he doesn't get anything. Moving on, Meis HaYavam, let's say the Yavam himself died, Uba Suffolk Lital Chalka Shel Aviv, and the Suffolk is coming along to take his father's Chelek. He's basically saying, listen, my father's Shimon, Shimon just died, so I get the whole Yerusha. Whereas Shimon's other children, and they're definitely his children, they have the ability to claim that that's not 100% true. And therefore, it would be as follows. Yavakadmaya Miskein, if the first one, meaning if Reuven was very poor, so Amrin Leh, the Shimon's definite children can tell the Suffolk, Hani Avuch, really Reuven was your father, receive whatever Shimon, our father, had received from your father. And again, since he's poor, he's a Miskein, he has nothing, so the Suffolk walks away with very little. It was in Hava Atir, if Reuven was very wealthy, so Amrin Leh, Shimon's other children can tell him, Kulan Achim Bnei Achin, we're all brothers, the sons of brothers, Bai Venir Shchalke Shal Avinu, Vechalke Shal Achi Avinu, let's inherit our father's portion and our father's brother's portion, meaning in this situation, they can treat the Suffolk like an equal brother. That way, they're also going to be able to take equally in Reuven's Nechasim, because again, in this situation, Reuven's very wealthy, so it works out to their benefit. Now, continues Kasa's case in the Mishnah, which had said that even though this child is Safek, we don't know who his father is, he's still kosher. That means he's not a mamzer, and he's allowed to marry a regular Yiddish woman. So Tengmar tells us, Tony, we have a brisa. Let's say Shimon, the Yavam, stayed with his Yavama, and he had another child from her. So a Rishon really is Kohen Gadol, the first one that was born, who's a Safek, he's right to be the Kohen Gadol, meaning even though we don't know who his father is, his genealogy, his Yichus, is still 100%, and he can even be the Kohen Gadol. Whereas Vasheni, mamzer b'Safek, the second one is actually Safek mamzer, because maybe there was no Chiv Yibim in the first place, and it turns out that Shimon's living with his brother's wife, and so the second child would be a mamzer b'Safek, and he wouldn't even be allowed to marry a regular Jewish woman. However, Lazar Yaakov Emmer, he says, ain mamzer b'Safek, there's no din of mamzer b'Safek, and therefore he wouldn't be allowed to marry a regular Jewish woman. However, Maid Rabbi Lazar Yaakov b'Safek Kusim b'Safek Chalalim, Rabbi Lazar Yaakov does agree that if we have a person who's a Safek Kusi or Safek Chalal, then they're not allowed to marry like regular. If they're Safek Kusi, they're not allowed to marry a regular Yid, and if they're Safek Chalal, then they're not allowed to marry a Kayin. However, this is not like the following, like we learned over there, this is a Mishnah Maseches Kedushin, that Asar Yuchsin Olam Bavel, 10 Yuchsin, meaning 10 groups of genealogical classes, were brought up from Bavel when Ezra went up to Eretz Yisrael from Bavel to begin rebuilding the second base of Mikdash. He cleared out Bavel of all the Sfeikas, of all the people who were not so sure what their genealogy was, and the Mishnah says that there was 10 different groups. Now, two of those groups are called Shtukim and Asufim. Both of them are Safik Mamzerim. They're not allowed to marry full-fledged Yidin, and that's clearly not like Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, because all that is Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov. According to Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, Shmoina, there's only 8 Yuchsin that came from Bavel, because according to him, that a Safik Mamzer is allowed to marry a full-fledged Yid. So Shtukim and Asufim are not their own class, they're not their own group of Yuchsin, and so according to him, there's really only 8. Furthermore, I'll tell you, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lezer, Tisha, according to Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lezer, there's only 9 Yuchsin. That's because according to them, the class called Shtuki or Shtukim, they're also allowed to marry into the Kahal, they're allowed to marry full-fledged Yidin. So if there's only 9, it's only Aldati de Rabbanon Asara, according to the Rabbanon, that both Shtukim and Asufim are Safik Mamzerim, and they're not allowed to marry full-fledged Yid. So that's who the Mishnah Kiddushin is going like. That would be like the Rabbanon. We're going to stop for the day and pick up one with Halacha Gimel. But for now, everyone should have a wonderful day.